And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, with another episode of the Red and White Football Podcast with your host, myself, Cormac, and my co-host, Taylor. Taylor, how are we?
You know what, Cormac? It's been a while.
It's been a couple of weeks, folks.
And as you can imagine, I've been boiling up all my inner excitement ready for today and today only. So I'm ready to hop off, Cormac. How about yourself? How you been?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back. We've had a few weeks off, folks. As we did mention in the last pod, I've been away. There's been some sickness as well. But we are all back and never feeling any better. A lot has happened, obviously, as it always does in the world of football. But we're going to be talking about basically the last few weeks of football, the big topic of which I think is Liverpool's decline, Man United's
rise,
three games in a row of winning, and Arsenal being the best team in the world. As you can see, I'm representing today as well. But I think the best place to start, maybe, let's get it out of the way, is maybe Man United.
Are we getting Man U at the top of the running order, are we, Cormac?
Yeah, I just think I want to get it over and done with quite early.
Well, how long have you got?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, in terms of the Premier League altogether, there hasn't been any consistent teams this year, other than maybe Arsenal. There's been a lot of, you know, smaller teams winning. The likes of Bournemouth are currently in second. Speaking of small teams, Spurs are in third. So you've got a lot of chopping and changing. But all of a sudden, from Man United looking like they were having the worst season of all time, which in many ways they were, are now sixth and joint on points with Man City in fifth. Taylor, are you Ruben Amorim's biggest fan now?
As frequent listeners of the pod will know, I have forever loved three at the back and loved Ruben Amorim and never said anything other than those two facts right there. No, in all seriousness, we have turned what seems to be a corner of some sorts. And in a world where everything was going so wrong and so badly and there never seemed to be light at any tunnel, first I just want to start off by saying, Manchester United fans, breathe. Because it's been horrible. And right now, we just have to enjoy this moment of a bit of consistency. We haven't seen consistency at all during
since Amorim's tenure.
Well, even towards the back end of Ten Hag, it was very flip-floppy, up and down. This is the first time he's won three games in a row, speaking after the victory at Brighton at the weekend. And it's just the manner of victories. It all kind of kick-started with, obviously, Manchester United getting the result against Sunderland 2-0. Yep. It was Senna Lahman's debut and goal. Very much a game which just needed to be won just before the international break. Otherwise, I would have probably sat here talking about who was going to be the next Manchester United manager.
After Brentford. Brentford 3-1
as well. But obviously they won that game. Benjamin Sesko scored. Nice to see him kick off his account for the season. And then obviously the long international break. But as we like to think in the Premier League terms, what you don't want to be going into the international break is the crisis club. Because each and every week, one team in the Premier League at any given moment will be said crisis club. And the goal of everyone is to not be that, especially over an international break.
When it's an extra week long.
Yeah, so everyone was able to take a deep breath, just reset. And obviously the first game post-international break being that game at Liverpool, which we weren't able to touch on the pod, but I'm going to briefly touch on here. Oh, what a result, boys. Who'd have guessed? I did. I put a bet down on it. And I'm not a betting man, although I am now. Manchester United obviously won in the thanks to a 82nd minute winner from Harry Maguire, thanks to a very fantastic early start from Brian Mbeumo. I thought Manchester United, that was the first game where I've seen us play like quite differently in terms of just going for the long ball all the time, not looking to pass it out the back, looking to take some pressure off that back three. And I thought that's probably where we saw the goalkeeper really alter the confidence of the players that were playing.
Was that Lahman's first start?
That was Lahman's second game in goal. He started against Sunderland. Yeah, okay. And this was the game where he made a fairly good save against Isak. Mm-hmm. He also just looked like, because we had this tactic where we were going to kick it long and attack the second ball every single time.
Yeah,
it very much seemed as though the defenders felt the confidence to step forward 5 yards mm-hmm. rather than being 5 yards back, which then just pushed the whole team up the pitch. And as a result, we were able to try and claim those second balls, which they did with relative success against Liverpool. I thought we, going to Anfield, having not won there since I was 15 years old, to go see them do that with the pressure that Ruben Amorim has had on him some justification. Well, some he needs some flowers for that because that's not easily done.
It's not easy for anyone to win it.
And then I think so that was a fantastic result, and that kind of just changed the whole tune. First back-to-back wins under Ruben Amorim in the Premier League. Shocking that it took this long, but hey ho, we can move on from that now. And then this game of the weekend just against Brighton very much felt like the litmus test of where truly is Manchester United. Because you can beat Liverpool in a one-off game, we've seen it before. You can beat a Sunderland before the international break, but three wins in a row on the line against a team which just has always been us. The last three games at Old Trafford, they've managed to get the result. Danny Welbeck loves scoring against us.
As he did again.
You know, it very much could have been slip up, full point from here. But actually, they started fantastically well, got the early goal from Matheus Cunha. Fantastically taken goal for a man who probably one of the only few signings who managed to go so many games without a goal or assist and not almost take the shtick, just because I think everyone's been able to see that he has been performing just without the output. Yeah. And that it was more just when rather than if he does actually get that first goal. And he did against Brighton, wonderful taking goal. Fantastic touch to open up the shot for him to bury it in the bottom corner. No one looked happier in that whole stadium. And there was plenty of happy people in that stadium than Matheus Cunha. So that was great to see. Uncle Casemiro running it back, taking the tunes from the Stretford end to take a shot and wildly deflecting. But that second goal was huge, just for confidence. The stadium almost felt like this could be on. And then obviously, just after the break, Brian and Bumo went and scored again. Fantastic goal, nicely set up by Benjamin Sesko. So it looked like this was again the game for Manchester United's new summer signings really looking good, settling in, starting to get that attacking output, really starting to rack up some goals, some assists, looking competent. I mean, Brian Mbeumo looks awesome. Like, it was never in doubt. As soon as I saw that we were interested in him, I remember saying to you, I can't believe if we do sign this guy because he's really good. Mm. But if we do, he's going to be ace for us. And I think so far, he's been our best player of the season so far. Obviously, as is the case in Manchester United, no games without a hiccup in some respect. Danny Welbeck thunder twatted in a free kick from 25 yards out after a really stupid decision by Patrick Dorgu to foul him despite the ball being nowhere near him, despite the goalkeeper having the ball, which then kind of let Brian. But even then, what I liked about that was it felt there was a bit of pressure, tangible sense of like tension in the air. But Brian never really had an open play opportunity to really take advantage of that. They were pinging shots out from outside of the box, you know, testing the goalkeeper. But it never felt like it was coming. Obviously, then they scored the goal from the corner. We have a bit of a problem with set piece goals at the minute, or this season in general, which hopefully should be ironed out over the course of the season. But leaning up to 3-2, but then obviously Bruno Fernandes with the very good non-assist of leaving the ball for Brian Mbeumo to just blast home and settle the win. And the fourth goal was the most important goal of them all, because had they not won 4-2 rather than 3-2, the whole narrative would have been, yeah, they won, but they almost bottled it. Whereas actually the 4-2 kind of made everyone forget about that 10-15 minute period where they almost bottled it to actually we just smashed Brighton. And then that result very briefly took us up to third in the table, I want to say, or fourth in the table. And it was very much results pending elsewhere, which have been very favourable to Manchester United this weekend. So the overall outlook now for Manchester United is, for the first time in a long time, a bit of positivity, which we like to see. The new signings look good. No one's talking about three at the back anymore, which again is fantastic, because I hated talking about it. It felt like the stick to beat him with, because that's just all I could see. And I think that's what everyone else saw. But everyone's talking about, can this team actually go and maybe secure European football for next season? If you'd have asked me 3 games ago, I said no way in hell. If you ask me 3 games now, I don't know how we're going to do it. We're going to win the Champions League this year. So it's good to see us back. It's good to see the team performing with a slight level of coherency. It's nice to be able to do one of these monologues without wanting to rip my face off. So,
Is this a sign of a new Man United then, Taylor? Or is this just a simple, we've had a nice streak, but the old Man United will return against whoever?
No, I hope when we say a new Manchester United, it would be dumbfounded of me to suggest that we're not going to lose a game ever again. But what will happen is, when we do lose these games, can we then go back and then just win the next two? Instead of going on a losing streak or a lose, draw, win, you know, very scattered results. Can we just get a bit of consistency? Of course, we're going to lose some games because it's just the nature of this team. You can't go from losing a lot of games to then winning a load of games just like that. But it's about tapering expectations to be like, okay, look, when we do lose, it's not the end of the world. But can we then go on to win the next couple of games? I think we've got some favourable fixtures coming up generally. Obviously, the weekend, we've got Forest at 3 o'clock. Yep. Again, every time I look at Premier League fixtures, I'm very much thinking it could just go either way. Like, really, these teams look really good. I guess you just kind of, you got to hope that Forest, obviously, they haven't got midweek action this week.
New manager,
the game. New manager against, against Dutch. But, like, new manager being the third manager, is it quite the same as a new manager bounce after, with the second one? But if they can get the result there and get four wins on the bounce, the whole overall mood will change. And obviously, just before the international break, we then got Spurs away, 12:30 kickoff on the Saturday. And again, if you could get a result against Spurs, who are also fighting for those European places. Spurs at home have been pretty dreadful this season. They've been pretty good away from home. Mm-hmm. So again, it could go either way. But if you could manage to get a good amount of points, you get 4 points from those two games, say.
Yeah.
You're going into the international break and everyone's not screaming for the manager's head.
I mean, yeah, 4 points for those two games would be amazing.
Yeah.
I think the interesting one especially, I think, will be Forest. I think from what I've seen, Man United, you've always looked better against the better teams, haven't you?
Yes, we're very good in the one-offs.
Yeah, when you're not relying on the ball as much and you are able to kind of break quick passes and just sit in a little bit more. So come against Forest this weekend, who notoriously do play the same way, especially under Dyche, will continue to play the kind of old Nuno way.
But what actually gives me hope for these games a bit more than perhaps in previous seasons is that the signings that we bought in the form of Mbeumo and Cunha, their whole thing for their previous clubs was having to turn up against the akin of Forests and your, you know, say your Brentfords and your Wolves going up against your Fulhams and your Forests and your Brightons to try and get those points. Brian Mbeumo is much better at scoring a goal against a Forest than, say, like someone like Rasmus Højlund would have been last year.
Yeah, in the sense of the Premier League, but it is different when you are a Man United player.
Yeah.
The narrative is completely different. The stakes are completely different.
You're going to get...
Mentality is completely
different. Different type of opportunities. And I feel like the players that we've brought in are able to finish those opportunities better than what we've had previously. Going with, say, like a Højlund and a Garnacho,
sure,
you're going to struggle a lot more when you're just constantly facing a low block than if you've got Brian Mbeumo. And we will probably just continue to try to look for him on the break.
Mm.
He'll drive us forward. We're being really direct. We're pressing high at the pitch. I think we'll still probably bring that tactic to a Forest and to, well, to a Spurs will be a different type of game. But no, I think it'll be really interesting. It's just nice to see us play well. I almost watched against Brighton in somewhat disbelief that we were winning 3-0 against Brighton. I was like, this is crazy. I feel like I woke up in a different dimension. Finally, because I was sick of the world I was living in before. God, it was so miserable. God, we suck so much. But right now, we might just be the best team in the world.
Yeah,
so
you're on a bit of a hot streak, aren't you?
We are. But we have been so cold for so long.
Exactly. And I mean, to be completely honest on my side, I think it's only a matter of time until
naturally. I think anyone with a sense who's not involved in the situation at all would look at that and be like, yeah, okay, they've won a couple of games.
No, but you have, to be fair, credit to United. They have looked better. And it is just, I think, just more playing more direct, playing the ball long. Not trying to faff around with, you know, farting midfield.
Well, also, I just think, honestly, it boils down to something as simple as the new goalkeeper has instilled a bit more of a confidence. So that Luke Shaw, for example, when we scored the, I think it was the third or the second goal against Brighton, he burst from defence into midfield to dispossess high up the pitch because he knew that he could, because we were playing high enough that he could like jump the midfielder, take the ball off him, and then recycle possession and we score. So I think we could do that against the Forest as well, especially with the state they're currently in.
And then credit to Amorim as well. I think he deserves a lot of credit considering we do bash the living shit out of him.
Yeah,
sometimes.
And I'm still generally a bit unconvinced by the bloke.
No, completely.
Yeah,
I think that's
completely
fair enough. But I think Gary Neville made a fair point. I think he did say that the players have always liked him and they've never really stopped.
You didn't hear...
He seems to be quite a likeable bloke, doesn't he?
You didn't hear rumours swirling around at the beginning of the season when we were stinking the place out of like player unrest. You weren't hearing rumours of the players don't have faith in the manager and all that, which at Manchester United you always do.
Yeah.
So the fact we didn't hear that kind of, to me, also I think it's just because we've mixed the blend of the dressing room. I think Cunha's been a really well adopted member of the dressing room. He looks like a bundle of enthusiasm. I think it was quite funny, a quick story on Cunha after the game when he got his Man of the Match award. He got presented by the Premier League correspondent the man of the match, and then he got asked to do a TV interview, I think for like, it was like Premier League Mexico, and they were like, oh, because normally they only present it once, you walk around with it, and they were like, oh, could we present it with you again? He's like, yeah. And so he did another interview, and then I think he even went and did it again where someone presented. So no one was happier than Mateus Cunha, and almost feel like now he could probably kick on, and would I be surprised to see him score against Forest? Not particularly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good, and the midfield looks a bit more compact. Seems to be a more semblance of what's going on. I think Lisandro Martinez is almost coming back. I think that left
double
side.
That way,
Luke Shaw just playing 10 games in a row, by the way, for us is crazy. Wild. It's final year contract Shaw, man. Oh, so we've got to enjoy it.
Yeah, he's been average, hasn't he, at best, really?
No, he has been average, but he's
been fit.
He's been fit, which we haven't seen for a long time. And the fact that we can have someone, he is very good at just shielding the ball and moving the ball up a pit. Like, sure. He's obviously lost that pace now. But I think once Lisandro Martinez coming back, depending on what shape he's going to be in, he'll be just perfect.
You won't want to rush him back, though, will you? That's
no, I mean, it's been over a year now, and they took him on tour because they thought he'd be back in the first couple of weeks of the season, but they are really taking...
Yeah.
He started joining some group sessions and training and everything, so yeah, so it's looking good for Matt. No injuries at the minute, really. Everyone else seems to be falling down with injuries, I'm sure we'll discuss. You know, we now have a really beautiful situation where we could take Cunha, Sesko, Oren Bumo out of that team and put Mount in, and you're not really concerned because it all seems to be a bit of a fluid motion, you know.
Absolutely.
So my only big concern still remains is like, what the hell's happening with Kobbie Mainoo?
No one knows.
Amrin knows, and obviously he's seen something that the rest of us don't see, whereas he just still seems to prefer bringing on Manuel Ugarte, and that just terrifies me. So if you can't get ahead of Manuel Ugarte, what chance do you have? So hopefully, I just want to see it would almost take an injury in the midfield at the minute for the right personnel. It's not going to be Bruno because he never gets injured.
No.
And Uncle Casemiro is on an all-timer. So
yeah,
try and stop the man. So yeah, that's Manchester United, everyone. I think they're doing good. It's good to see.
All sunshine and rainbows at the moment.
Happy Taylor, happy life, you know.
Yeah.
Cannot complain. So Cormac, I'm sure you'd be keen to talk about something else.
Well, I think first we talk about...
I will continue my happy train.
Yeah, and I think we discussed Liverpool's downfall.
Oh, happily, Cormac.
Because they have been in a rotten form in recent weeks. So obviously, we've spoken about many times on the podcast, but they went off to a flying start this season. A lot of late-minute winners as well on that flying start. And we questioned, would that be consistent? Can they carry on to do that? Turns out, no. They've now lost 5 Premier League games on the bounce.
Oh, man, that's...
So Brentford, they lost 3-2, obviously, last weekend. There was United, then there was Chelsea. And then before that, they lost to Palace. And then they also lost to... No, sorry, they beat Everton. So 4 games, sorry, in the Premier League. But then they've also lost to Galatasaray in the Champions League. And then they beat Frankfurt in the Champions League as well. But what an absolute disaster.
What a disaster.
They've slipped from... They were initially, obviously, first in the league, and they were 3 points at the top of the league. They're now 7th, and they're now 7 points behind Arsenal, who are in first. Which
how
is
quick the
crazy.
How do the turns be tabling?
The turns do be tabling.
I mean, we probably, last time we did our pod, they might have just lost their first game, but I mean, at one point a month ago, they were 5 points ahead of Arsenal. Everyone's like, "Oh, race is finished."
Yeah. Just shows how quick things can change and how mental it all is.
Can't look at the league table until 10 league games in, ladies and gentlemen.
Which is this weekend.
Which
so
is this
get
weekend.
Excited, folks.
But Liverpool are in one hell of a spot of bother, you know.
Taylor, tell me, what's going on with Liverpool?
Well, they've obviously spent big. They spent 500 million, or as betterly phrased, £500 million.
Yeah, but £500 million sounds better.
£500 million this summer, ladies and gentlemen. They broke their record transfer not once, but twice.
Yeah.
And obviously the holistic problems stand at the players that they've signed have struggled to adapt.
Mm.
And the...
Other than maybe Ekitike, I think you could argue.
Ekitike,
all the others seem to be struggling.
Has been the most successful and has looked good from the go.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the one probably where everyone would... It's funny how football does work because everyone was expecting probably him to fall by the wayside a bit as the rest came to the fore.
As Isak came in and got fit. And
but it hasn't been the case. And then secondly, that defence, man. The one place they actually didn't... Well, I mean, obviously, they brought a right back and left back who...
Both look concerning, especially Kerkez, man.
Yeah.
He looks like he's... Like, the whole thing was like, oh, he's... Well, even for me, the way I was looking at it, played in the Premier League, he has the system, he knows what it's like physically and whatever. But he is just all over the place. He looks lost out there.
He looks like he's never played Premier League football before,
really
does he?
He's really struggling. Or just positionally, physically, everything.
He looks lost. Yeah.
He's really struggling. Really struggling.
And then combine that with the fact that Jeremy Frimpong's come in, very stop-start, been injured.
Injuries on and off.
Yeah. And to then, I think everyone's now kind of sensing how important Trent was to what Liverpool did.
And even Robertson, even last year. I think Robertson has started the last two games, maybe now.
But he looked off it last year, and that's why everyone was like, Liverpool need to buy a left-back. Kerkez is the guy. It can't be anyone else. And everyone in the world would have agreed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the centre-back pairing of Ibrahim Konate and Virgil van Dijk has just looked off the boil, man.
Yeah, I mean, Konate from the beginning of the season hasn't looked great.
No.
He's had a few here there good games, but as the whole season goes, he's looked really off it, really slow, really kind of just jaded. Van Dijk, I think, has still been most games at his best. On the weekend, I think just gone, he wasn't.
No.
He didn't have a great game. No one in Liverpool really did. And I think that at the moment is the biggest problem, really. Yeah. I think it's easy to say. You can look at the likes of Florian Squirts, who we love to talk about.
He looks rubbish, man. I hate, I'm not even going to glaze over it. If you're going to spend 100, I mean, I question spending that much money on him from the go.
Yeah.
And he's looked super mid. He looks, he's just always in the wrong place for Liverpool at the wrong time. You know, if he needs to be more forward, he's too back. If he's too forward, like, he's just not in the spaces that he hasn't been able to understand where he needs to be yet.
I think a lot of it still maybe a bit of a system issue.
Yeah.
To be fair, because from looking at when he was at Leverkusen, I didn't watch him loads at Leverkusen. From what I understand, he was very much the guy who played the pass to the assist in the sense of he was the one moving the ball around.
Yeah.
Letting the ball, especially in the final third, and just flowing in the kind of attacking section of the field. Whereas now it seems that he is expected to be the guy to create that final ball, that final shot.
Yeah.
Whereas he's not doing that.
No, he's not doing that.
Should he be able to do that for that kind of money?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, but also I think the big issue is that at Leverkusen, he was probably afforded the space in the system
and also the time to almost form
a front two to finish off chances, to arrive, crash the box.
Yeah.
Whereas now Liverpool are in a position where they've spent a lot of money on a lot of attacking players.
Yeah.
And whilst you're always going to have Salah and for the meanwhile as well, Cody Gakpo, you're going to have at least one of Ekitike and Isak playing as well.
Yeah.
And they're all occupying the spaces where Wirtz probably would have felt like he would have occupied at Leverkusen. So he's just not able to occupy the same spaces, which is preventing him from doing. He's also just, I think, quite weak on the ball.
He has,
He's obviously very good at the dribbling. He's very good at, he's very shifty. He's very good with it, but
I think he will get better. I don't necessarily think he's going to be the same player that he was in Bundesliga.
No.
I mean, is saying a lot, because that's saying, is he going to be the best player of the league? I mean, he doesn't look anywhere near it at the moment.
Yeah.
I think with time, with the system, with the physicality and the kind of just him adapting to the Premier League, which will happen probably over, come the new year, I imagine he'll be a lot more climatised.
I think he's just going to continue to struggle.
I don't think he's going to be great, but I don't know. It's so difficult to say, isn't it?
Yeah. And based on what I've seen so far, just system-wise, there's going to be pressure to keep playing all the big guys up top.
Mm.
You're going to have to keep playing Salah. You're going to have to start playing Isak, and you're going to have to, if Ekitike continues to score whilst the rest are like faltering. Struggling.
He has to be there as
well. And Cody Gakpo has looked like Liverpool's best attacking player, so you have to keep playing him as well.
Yep.
That also means like kind of shoehorns Wirtz away from the attack more, where he's so much less effective. It's not looking good.
Looking at those names, I think, as well, that's where I see it. I think you can trust they will sort it out, the front lot.
Well, you say that, though.
They will get goals. They will create goals somehow.
Yeah.
Salah will have his moments still, even though he's not at his usual.
Well, that's
Salah
another
levels.
Big problem that they're having, isn't it? The fall off of Mohamed Salah.
Yeah.
He struggled as well this season. I wonder who would have called that as well at the start of the season.
How many times? The compilation of Taylor passing himself on the back.
Yeah.
He's just done everything.
Like, it's
as
crazy.
As opposed to the opposite, because he's happened to forget everything else.
Yeah, I've never said nothing wrong ever, and it's unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen, and we love to see it. But yeah, Mohamed Salah has struggled this season.
Yeah, really struggled.
He's lost the ball. He looks like he's lost 15% of his pace.
Well, it's weird because even last season, he wouldn't necessarily be having the best game.
No.
But he'd always just come up with a goal or an assist or both. Yeah.
He looks like he's lost that instinct for output, which is made him elite.
Obviously, loss of Trent, that's not going to be nothing, is it?
No, I don't think
and
so.
And just the overall other struggles of the front line of Liverpool, I think, has all kind of had a knock-on effect, as well as maybe him just getting that 1 year older.
But then last year, you had Luis Diaz, who wasn't an output machine, no. And you also had Darwin Nunez, who was...
Chaos,
and wasn't really an output machine either. But he was just always delivering. Mm. So it's almost the same for him, but different, because there's different people around him. But yeah, it's more probably of a relationships thing. He's now gone from Trent behind him at all times to Szoboszlai or Frimpong, mm-hmm. or Connor Bradley.
Yep.
Which you could combine the three players and you're not going to get Trent.
Yep.
And it's showing.
Yep.
Another big issue for Liverpool is obviously Alisson getting injured.
That's been a massive miss as well. I think on the weekend when they played Sunderland, mm-hmm. and they just lost 2-1.
They lose to Sunderland.
Was it Sunderland? No, Brentford. The other red and white stripes. I think there was a few goals there where I'm like, Alisson probably would have done better.
Against Manchester United, the Brian Mbeumo goal in the second minute, Alisson probably would have saved that.
And again, it's difficult if you're comparing every other keeper to arguably the best keeper in the Premier League of the last 10 years. Probably is the best goalkeeper of the last 10 years. I think it'd
be Andre Onana would question your opinion there, but
I think he's been a big miss as well. But
he has.
For Liverpool, it is that back line. Until defensively they sort themselves out, I don't think there's any chance that they'll be pushing that.
No, agreed. And to just touch on the goalkeeper again, you know, remember last year when Alisson, because Alisson does get injured a lot for goalkeeper.
He does, he always gets injured.
But they had Kelleher, who was tried and trusted. And almost it would have been a plug and play and the Liverpool players would have been used to it. Whereas Mamardashvili is a bit of an unknown quantity to them. Shout out me for being able to say that properly. Yeah. he's obviously an unknown quantity to them. So obviously when they're struggling for form and then you have a new goalkeeper you've never played with before, and he hasn't obviously inspired confidence with his kicking or anything like that particularly, you know, that's just going to add to the... It's essentially, half of it is a new team.
Yeah.
And it's almost crazy how they've gone for the wild Galactico tactic of just signing everyone for loads of money and thinking it's gonna work. I very much thought Liverpool would have been a bit smarter than that. Obviously, from a layman who was watching them do their business, everyone's like, wow, that's crazy. They've gone and signed fantastic players. But there's been so many historical instances where paying over £100 million for one player doesn't necessarily work.
I mean, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and then so going to do that twice, really...
It feels like they've overcompensated, haven't they, from not spending big money from the 2 years before.
And had they just maybe found an extra £10 million at the beginning of the window and signed Mark Gahey, who's to say anything would be that different? You never know. Obviously, a brand new player to bring into that system. But again, he does have that certain level of pedigree, being England's starting centre back, knowing the Premier League, obviously wanted the move, but they never got that done. And now, with hindsight, the guy they did sign, Giovanni Leone, being out for the season with an ACL, and really, I don't know who they have outside of Konate and
Van Dijk. There, obviously,
Joe Gomez was someone they would have sold had they had the right amount of money bid for them. You know, so
also Bayern Munich links for him.
Crazy man! Anyone would be buying anyone from the Premier League. Overall, fantastic to see Liverpool struggling so much. We hope it continues for the foreseeable.
Who have they got coming up? I'm just looking. They got, obviously, they're playing tonight. They're playing Crystal Palace in the...
I hope Crystal Palace do them. That's actual great. What?
So since the last game they played each other, which was in the Premier League a couple of weeks ago, when it was neither team have lost, they ended up drawing. Neither team since that game has now won a game.
Wow. Football be doing the craziest things.
But this Saturday, they're playing Aston Villa, who just beat City on the weekend, just gone. It'll be interesting. Or then the week after, next Tuesday, they've got Real Madrid.
Real Madrid and then Manchester City.
And then Man City. Wow. So it doesn't really stop for them in the next few weeks.
But almost that's probably what they need, if that makes sense.
What, to just hit?
To have just a ton of hard games, because ultimately, odds are for a team like Liverpool, they're going to win one eventually.
Yeah.
And if they do it against the Real Madrid, if they went back-to-back against Real Madrid and Manchester City, all of a sudden everyone's changing their narrative and being like,
back.
They're back. They found their gear now. They're in the mojo. First questions really around Arne Slot and what he's been doing for the past year, other than joyriding the success of Jurgen Klopp. Yeah.
Apparently contract talks have been delayed.
Oh, really?
With Arne Slot, which... That can mean anything, really. I doubt it's probably...
I like a man with an excuse, and he has found every single one of them in recent weeks to explain why Liverpool are struggling so much. My favorite one being, we just had so many away games. You know, it's really tough when you're in a bad spot of form, just playing all these away games. And then I looked at Spurs, who have managed to win every single away game this season. So you can give me any excuse under you want, Arnie, but essentially, pattern up, brother.
Yeah.
You spent a lot of money.
No, it's true. You can't have too many excuses. But obviously, Liverpool were top of the league. Now they're seventh. But now who are top of the league?
Oh, go on, Cormac. Time for you to bask in some glory.
Those North London Reds, them pesky, not conceding any goals, really boring team to watch. North London Reds,
well,
man.
I feel like for Arsenal, you're gonna explain this to me further. We talk about Manchester United, we talk about Liverpool, and there's so much narrative. There's almost so much to talk about and dissect.
Yep.
Whereas with Arsenal, I don't really know what really there is to talk about in terms of just like you guys are just doing the business.
That's
tell me how you're doing it, Cormac.
I mean, that's essentially it. The big thing, obviously, that we all know is that we do not let people score. We've conceded three goals in the Premier League this season after nine games. I said at the beginning of the year, we're chasing that 15 goals that Chelsea had with Mourinho in 2004-05. Is that going to happen? Probably not. That's
could you put a bet on that? Is that the kind of thing you can bet on?
You'd have to go to a special bookies or whatever. I don't know how it works.
Email us.
Bookies, sponsors. No shame. But yeah, we are incredibly difficult to score against. It's all credit to Arteta and the kind of back line defensively that we have and the midfield as well. We had that stat where we didn't have a shot on target for 2.5 games until we played Atletico. But we had the likes of Fulham, who didn't have a shot target against us, and West Ham, who didn't have, I mean, two poor teams this season, given. So far in the Champions League, we've scored 6 goals and haven't conceded 1. And we are, like you said, there's not too much to talk about in the sense of we're just consistently winning these games. Obviously, we love a set-piece goal. There's a narrative about, can Arsenal keep doing that? I don't think that fucking matters as long as we keep winning games. If there is an argument of, if we're not winning games and we are along those set pieces, then they're like, okay, we obviously need to create more. But in the meantime, as long as we can keep scoring from set pieces and stop other teams scoring, I don't care. I'd win a Premier League like that.
Yeah, 100%. You've got to just take it. I think the really important thing that Arsenal have been doing this year is they've won the games that they lost points on last year.
That's the big talk. You know, the likes of Fulham, who we dropped points again. I think we only got 1 point of 2 games against them last year. West Ham, we lost to them last year at the Emirates as well. We obviously beat them 2-0 this time. So just little things like that. And also if you have a look at the fixtures that we have played, you know, we beat Newcastle away. We drew against Man City at the Emirates. We lost to Liverpool, obviously, that, but we beat Man United at Old Trafford. So we've played a lot of the tricky games already, and we are currently sitting 4 points clear of the Premier League. And I guess the big question is just, can we carry on? Can we keep going? Yes, provided injuries is obviously always the big one.
You guys have a lot of injuries.
We have a lot of injuries at the moment, and there's been more worries as well with Gabriel and Saliba, both who have had injury problems. I'm not sure what the current state of that is, but we are playing tonight against Brighton, so I wouldn't be surprised if neither of them feature from what I've seen kind of on the lead-up. But we've been far the most consistent team in the league this year. I think we have benefited. I mean, it's been a long time coming for Arsenal because we've been a good team now, bordering on a great team for 4 years. And we have genuinely, I believe, just been unlucky when it comes to not winning things. Whether that's just kind of the wrong result, because everyone loses, but the wrong results at the wrong time, the wrong injuries at the wrong time, other teams being pretty exceptional and just kind of out of nowhere. So for us to now finally have this current form, it's still 9 games into the season, so anything could happen. But we are now, you know what you're going to get with Arsenal. You're going to get a team that's going to dominate the ball. It's really difficult. You can't go down the middle. You have to go out wide. And you're putting crap boxes, balls into the box, which Saliba and Gabriel are heading away like it's nobody's business. And then you're going up the other end, and we've got Declan Rice, who is probably the best set-piece taker in the world at the moment.
Incredible.
He just puts it exactly where he wants it every time. And then you've got Gabriel, who is probably the best header of the ball from any set-piece, but defensive or offensive at the moment. So, yeah, I think for Arsenal, it's just a case of, can we keep this going? I don't see why not. We are probably now favourites to win the league, I think, probably quite comfortably. I mean, I said at the beginning of the year, but what do I know? A little Taylor pat on the back. That's it, really. We've got difficult games coming up. I'm just trying to remind myself now. We've got a nice run coming up. We've got Burnley, then we've got Slavia Prague, the Champions League, followed by Sunderland, which ironically might be a title game at the moment, the way Sunderland are playing. And then Spurs, then Bayern Munich and Chelsea. So those three are going to be a little bit more interesting. But I'm confident that we can get results at all of those games.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially, you know, even against the likes of your Bayerns and your Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea are all over the place. That's a whole other interesting discussion, which I'm sure we'll have at some point. But yeah, I think it's, at the moment, ball's in Arsenal's court. It's Arsenal's to win now. It's Arsenal's to lose. It's Arsenal's to win. In the case, they've got to keep going, keep doing what they're doing. And yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Sorry, ladies. I'm just choking on the analysis that Cormac's giving me. But we can probably break this down a bit more on Arsenal, in the fact that something I've observed is it's almost, it doesn't matter who you're placing in that team now.
Yeah.
You're such a well-oiled machine.
That's it.
Everyone's performing their roles. Tell me, who's the underrated player for Arsenal this season? Who's someone who's just quietly going about their business and allowing this thing to happen?
I mean, Timber's kind of the obvious choice. I wouldn't even say he's underrated anymore.
No, I think he's getting his plaudits now, yeah.
Everyone knows he is the best right back in the league. I think Calafiori as well was maybe a little bit underrated, because I saw a stat. I can't remember the exact name of the stat. It was one of those random niche ones that you see. But he's obviously receiving that ball in that midfield slot all the time. And him being a body in that extra midfield just is so key for us as well when it comes to moving the ball in the final third. And also then defensively dropping back, being 6'3 or however tall he is as well. He's another big boy, which is the way football obviously is now these days. It's going up more and more. It is just big boys and set pieces. And who has the biggest team? And Arsenal, we do have a big
team. You do have a big team.
A lot of big boys in there. Special mention as well to the likes of Trossard, who I think has had a very good season, popping up with several goals. Martinelli as well now, who's kind of, he's featuring off the bench a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But he seems to be just that little bit more. The finish that he had the other week against Atletico, I thought, well, Miles Lewis-Skelly, shout out, he did an amazing run through.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then a really, really tidy finish from Martinelli, which I haven't seen that kind of confidence to take it first time.
It seems to be by design at the minute that he's become a finisher rather than a starter.
Absolutely. But I mean, again, I'd be happy for him to start. I'd be happy for Gyökeres to start up top. I know, obviously, he's not getting those goals, and I think he maybe would get more shit again if he weren't winning these games.
Yes.
But if you do watch the games, obviously, he is just a battering ram. Mm-hmm. And he does not stop. Credit to him.
Yeah.
He is relentless. Is he the best player on the pitch? Definitely not. Is he going to like give these defenders a really rough time and just knack them out over the 90 minutes? Absolutely.
Sounds like a great job description. I reckon you could definitely give that a go.
I don't know, man. I've had too many beers.
I think something as well Arsenal have in their armour, which is yet to be fully explored, is that you're yet to see your better attacking players really hit their stride to you.
Yeah.
So you're winning all these games, but that's without Saka scoring and assisting lots as he normally does. Mm-hmm. Without Eze kind of, obviously I know we got the winner against Palace the other day, but without him kind of really kicking into form and really starting to get that output numbers increasing. So I think you guys have that to look forward to.
Exactly.
So whilst you remain defensively solid, you can almost allow your attacking players to kind of really hit stride, mm-hmm. which should probably happen over the next few weeks. You'd suggest. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how it develops. You guys look great. You obviously got Madueke out injured at the minute, yeah. Odegaard out injured at the
Havertz
minute.
Havertz out
injured at the minute. You wouldn't be surprised that when Havertz comes back, providing what state and condition he's in, to maybe see him kind of take Gyökeres out of the firing line a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, special shout out to Eze as well. I think he's slotted perfectly into the system.
Like such a good Arsenal player.
Yeah, he really has. He looks like he's been there for years, basically.
But that's the thing. You can be a Liverpool and sign someone for 130 million in the form of Florian Squirt, or you can go and buy Eze for half that price, and he just looks so much better.
Yeah,
in and around in that team than Vertz has looked so far for Liverpool. So
yeah.
I think your business has paid off.
I keep buying
more defenders, but now when these defenders are coming in, like Mascara looks like a great buy.
Mascara's been amazing.
We said it at the time. He's highly rated in Spain, and it shows he's...
Yeah, well, the fans were gutted when they let him go.
Yeah, and you guys got him for a bargain as well, you know.
Yeah. So, and Kempe as well, he's starting to make... He's had a few injuries, but he's starting to kind of make a few...
You've got how many defenders, it doesn't even really matter. And you just keep buying centre-backs to play at left-back.
I know, we're playing an order full-back.
Yeah, man.
That's his fetish, is buying
centre-backs to play at left-back. I agree with what you said earlier with Yuri and Timber. He's looking like one of the best players in the league this season.
Yeah.
So you can only hope he stays injury-free.
Well, that's a big one,
And he can just kind of... With him there, you guys are just looks. He oozes class. He defends so well, attacks so well,
absolutely,
and everything in between that spectrum. He does so well. He's such an 8 out of 10 in everything.
He really. It's so nice to see just a player like that play for your team.
Yeah, it's just
every time he's on the ball, you just trust him. Every time he's defending one-on-one, you just trust him. He's no nonsense.
Yeah.
It's been great. I can't. It's all positive right now for Arsenal. It's just that could inevitably there will be a tricky patch. There'll be a moment where we drop a few points, you know, we draw, I don't know, away to Palace or whatever it is, you know, and we just, you know, draw, loss, whatever. So it's, can we keep winning what we can? Can we stay in the conversation, which we are currently, obviously we're 4 points clear. But it's gonna be an interesting kind of next couple of weeks, I think, to see what happens from Liverpool, what happens to the other teams even around the top four.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting for everyone but Arsenal, because I think you guys will just continue to edge out results in one way or another.
Could be over by April if everything goes well.
Yeah, well, we love this. Long story short, Arsenal have already won the league, ladies and gentlemen. But again, it's now and then for you guys. You guys have the advantage. You guys have the points lead and everything. So this is the chance, this is the moment for you guys to really establish the dominance, which with the strong defence that you have. And, you know, I've said I don't really rate Raya that much. I've slightly changed my tune on him slightly. He's looking really blended with that back line. It all signs point in the direction of ball drops. Arsenal managing to get there, hopefully, and eventually, unless Manchester United win every single Premier League game for the rest of the
season.
Which could happen. Well done, Arsenal. We're happy for you.
Please, lads, don't fuck it up. But it's still so early. But I think we should have a special mention as well. So just the top four.
Special mention some teams.
What's going on? Because Bournemouth are currently, Taylor's prediction of putting them in fourth is also looking awfully wrong, because they are sitting in second currently, sitting on 18 points. So they are currently Arsenal's closest rivals, followed by Spurs on 17, who are joint on points with Sunderland. And I mean, again, Cormac, I'm gonna pat myself on the back. Granit Xhaka has looked
awesome.
Really, really good for them. Unbelievable. I mean, all the promoted teams have done really well this season. They've already got more points than all the other
relegated teams. I saw a stat which was like Sunderland have already amassed like 49% of the points of all the promoted teams from last season. Yeah. You're like, whoa, mental. That's cool, man.
But they did spend 200 million in the summer, obviously, and that does play a factor. But you know, it's not easy. It doesn't matter how much money. The gap between the Championship and the Premier League, as we know, is still massive.
As we say with Liverpool, you know, for one narrative, there's always a counter-narrative. Sunderland bought loads of players.
Yeah.
But they all seem to be doing quite well, actually. Granit Xhaka, as you mentioned, has been a great signing. Alderete at the back has been fantastic them. Their goalkeeper, Robin Roos, also looks quite good.
I forgot his name. He's been really good.
So they've bought smart. And obviously, there's a tinge of jeopardy when you buy these players. They haven't necessarily bought like Premier League proven entities, but they've all hit the ground running. And look what it did. The Premier League has been sparked into life by what's happened so far this season.
It's been a really interesting season everywhere apart from Arsenal, basically, in terms of just you never really know what you're going to get. Speaking of what you don't really know what you're going to get, Chelsea, I think, is one of the biggest enigmas this year. Wow. They're just so up and down, so inconsistent. They've lost three of their last six now.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, with a victory against Liverpool wedged in between.
Yeah, which is, again, just says a lot about them, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know me. I hate to talk about Chelsea and how bad they are. No, I'm just kidding, ladies and gentlemen. I love to do it, and let's do it some more. They've looked really inconsistent. I think that defence is really lackluster. Obviously, they've had a couple of injuries in the back line. Mm. So, naturally, when you spent £2 billion on a squad, you should be able to just then put in one of your other £30 million random signings in, but they haven't. They had to put Josh Acheampong in, and he's been fine and everything, but again, you're just lacking such a quality of a back line. With a back line, you want that blend of experience, quality, like courage and everything. They haven't really got that at the minute. Robert Sanchez stinks. I think we dissected this Chelsea squad before. It's nice to see Alejandro Garnacho score his first goal in a game, which meant that his goal meant nothing.
Oh, his celebration did just piss me off.
I mean, I don't... he's got to be quite careful, I think. Obviously, it's quite funny, having scored against Sunderland, but they've lost the game. He's got to be quite careful, I think, how he goes about the next few months in his Chelsea career, because I don't think the Chelsea fans were enamoured with his signing anyway.
For those who didn't see the celebration, by the way, just in case you didn't, he basically jumped in front of the away fans, Sunderland fans, was back to them and pointed at his name.
Is the celebration he did, which was the oh now so famous celebration where Højlund and Maynard joined him on the bench. And it feels like he's just a bit hung up on the past, if that makes sense, by doing that.
Yeah.
Instead of looking forward to the future. I don't think he's enamored himself with the Chelsea fans by signing anyway. It's unfortunate for him that they signed Estevao, who just looked genuinely fantastic.
He gets bums off seats that more, doesn't he? He's been their kind of shiny new toy in the sense he looks very exciting.
Yeah, he does. And obviously Cole Palmer being out, and there's opportunities for him and he'll keep playing.
Yeah.
But I just think, I don't know. There's something off about that. I didn't really think the Chelsea move was going to be good for him anyway. No. Obviously, I know he wanted to stay in the Premier League, but I mean, it's going to be interesting. And Chelsea's squad as a whole, their whole squad mix is weird.
Besides of Caicedo, who maybe arguably is the best midfielder in the league.
Yeah, potentially.
And Enzo, who, as much as I dislike him as a football player, he's pretty good.
He's really all right, but at what point does a bubble burst somewhat for Chelsea? Whereas if they do fit, like if they are quite inconsistent, like say if they get knocked down Champions League relatively early in the early rounds of the knockouts, and then they end up finishing like seventh, and they've got Europa League or Europa Conference League again.
Maresca doesn't survive that. If Chelsea don't get Champions League and or win, let's say, if Chelsea finishes sixth and win an FA Cup, does he get sacked?
Probably not, but I feel like a lot of Chelsea fans would want him to be sacked. But then you've got a really weird blend now of squad where you've got three or four players who are that good where they desperately need to be playing Champions League football, like Caicedo, like Enzo,
Cole Palmer.
And then you've also got a blend of players who are much less experienced, lower points in their career, and would be happy settling for the Europa League or the Conference League. So you've got a real mixed bag of what expectations are with where players are in the squad.
Yep.
So you're going to have a bubble bursting where you might just see Moises Caicedo being like, yo, I know, I'm sorry I have a 36-year contract, but I actually want to go anywhere else. So
come to Arsenal, mate. It's great.
You can't sign any more players.
Yes, we can. Watch us. More defenders.
But yeah, Chelsea, lol, keep it up.
Newcastle have been all over the place this year as well, despite their big German Voltermeier that they have up top.
Voltermeier might be one of my favourite players outside of my own team.
Yeah. There's a bloke that goes to our gym who looks just like him, by the way.
Oh, really?
He was there early. I think he's taller. He's a big boy. He's taller than me.
Yeah.
And he's got the same light hair, got the tash.
It might be Nick Voltermeier.
It might be travelling down from Newcastle.
Nicholas, if it's you, come shout us out,
man.
Come say hi, man. Come on the pod, man. You'll be well received. We have maybe said some things about Newcastle in the past.
Yeah, but not about you, because we like you.
We like you, and you're in my fantasy now, so I'm backing you. You're my horse. So, but outside of that, Newcastle, they're looking shaky. The rest of it, you know, death taxes and Crystal Palace somewhere between 10th and 12th, and they're sat there in 10th. I think it's actually quite pertinent to just quickly touch on a team which, if you just showed them the table now from last year, they'd have been like, oh my gosh, what happened? Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, I mean, when we last did the pod, Ange was just, I think, taken over.
Ange had just been hired.
Yeah, so since then, obviously, he's been sacked, and he is now the 39 days, I think it was.
Yeah.
And now he's been replaced by the Dyshenator, which I think, I mean, the whole Ange thing in the first place, I think was kind of a bit of a disaster to go from the get-go, looking back. Mm. I can't remember what we said at the time.
Hindsight is a blessing in these situations.
That's it. But it just never, and it never clicked. It never worked out. Now they've got Sean Dyche in, which just screams, oh, relegation fight.
Yeah.
Great to see Sean Dyche in the European leagues, though. He's playing in the Europa League, obviously.
Smashing the Porto from the Portuguese league. Yeah, that's how you play football. Porto.
Exactly.
Sean Dyche.
I'd love to see Sean Dyche now winning the Europa League.
That would be amazing. But I think, again, Nottingham Forest have one hell of a cluster duck of a situation where you've spent all this money in the summer and almost none of the players have been able to establish themselves.
Nope.
They're very much relying on the players from last year who have obviously dropped off a level 10-15% from what they were achieving.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, towards the back end of last season, you could almost indicate something like this could have happened.
Yeah.
But it has been exaggerated incredibly by the sacking of Nuno, who now has gone to West Ham, and it's almost created enabled the situation which no one wanted, because now poor Nuno's had to take the job at West Ham. Yep. He looks like he's going to get relegated there. Now Sean Dyche is in at Nottingham Forest. You know, that could go wrong immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you got Roberto Mancini in the dugout, and it's just, I mean,
manager of the year.
I saw Roberto Mancini being linked and I just thought, what a world we live in where Sean Dyche and Roberto Mancini are both fighting for the same job. And the thought of Roberto Mancini managing Nottingham Forest, just there's something in
magical.
It. There's something in my soul which is like the X narrative on that is just screaming.
Especially with the personality that he kind of famous in. Very flair Italian.
Yes.
And then Marinakis, who is just a big character, a big man.
But to see Dyche now for Nottingham Forest, I almost want them to sort it out because
I like Sean Dyche.
Yeah, I like Sean Dyche, and I've enjoyed seeing Nottingham Forest in the Premier League. I don't think
they get relegated. I still think they're still. But Wolves are looking awful.
Wolves are looking ominous. Did you see the fracas in the crowds after the game against Burnley?
Jose Starr having a go at some of the fans, having a heated discussion message. He's not even playing the bloke.
Yeah.
So
Vitor Pereira going after it after the blokes he shares pints with.
Yeah.
But again, they gave him a new contract in September when it was looking ominous. I mean, I understand it because he did well when he came in last year.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily his fault that they sold their best players and invested badly. Mm. Just a quick side note, actually. Does Ryan Ait Nouri play for Manchester City still? Or is he just completely fallen off the map?
No, he is still there. He had an injury, didn't he?
I don't know. I just kind of remembered. I was thinking, who of all sold?
He is injured, yeah.
He is injured, is he? Okay. Yeah. But they've sold their best players and frankly bought badly. Which you just cannot afford to do in the Premier League. West Ham, also awful. Just struggling so much. They look like a defeated team.
They do. I think they're in real trouble this year. I do think Forest will be all right. I think Burnley and Leeds will slowly start to slip back down.
You'd expect Burnley to probably be that.
They got a big winner on the weekend. Fulham, again, they've got a good enough team. They are really struggling at the moment, though.
That's very much a blend of Marco Silva finding a year of contract. They want to give him a new one. They didn't spend much at all.
They spent any money. Summer. Yeah, they got that. What's his name? Kevin. Yeah. These look fine.
Love Brazilians with Anglo-Saxophone names.
That's it. But anything else you want to cover there, Taylor? That's kind of a real speed run of the last few
weeks. That
is a
speed run of the update of the Premier League.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to quickly think to see if there's anything else. Obviously, we did kind of touch on it. Bournemouth are just killing it.
Yeah.
Which we do love to see.
Absolutely.
And gosh, there's so much football going on, guys, which we haven't been able to digest.
I know, which we'll get back into.
Yeah.
But I think everyone is probably waiting for.
Oh, you're so right.
Is the return of the red and white scoreboard, folks.
I know you missed it.
For those who don't know, this is our weekly segment that we do, or in this case, monthly, because it's been a while, where we predict 5 games each week. We predict the scores, 1 point for the correct result, 3 points for the correct score, and we're keeping tally and we're looking at the league table. And then the winner at the end of the year, I don't know, gets a big kiss from the other one.
Huge.
Yeah, massive. So it stinks so high. But as things stand, the league table right now, I'm currently as well. Actually, sorry, we'll jump into the week's results gone first, and then we'll look at the league. But
speedrun these because these are long in the past.
Yeah, these are well gone now. So we have Barca versus PSG, if everyone remembers those. I said 1-3, Taylor said 2-2. It was, in fact, 1-2, 1 point for Cormac, 0 for Taylor.
Huge.
Chelsea Benfica, 1-1. Taylor said, I predicted 1-1. Taylor said 3-1. It was 1-0, both 0. No, Taylor, 1 point. Me, 0. Chelsea-Liverpool, I said 1-3. Taylor said 1-2. It was 2-1. 0 points for both of us. Roma-Lille, I said 3-0. Taylor said 2-1. It was 0-1. 0 points for both of us. Everton-Palace, I said 2-2. Taylor said 1-2. It was 2-1. 0 points for both of us.
God, we love a 0 point.
So we both come back off that last week with 1 point ahead, which is huge, obviously.
But you know what, Cormac? It's okay because whilst you've been away, I went to the dojo of football where I've now come back and I know ball.
Yeah, all right. Well, you've got to have to prove it now because as things stand, the league table, I'm on 25 points and Taylor's on 14.
Wow.
So there is a bit of ground for you to make up, but there's plenty of time to do so.
People love an underdog.
They do indeed. So going into this week then, Taylor, I'm going to let you have the 3 games picked.
Wow.
Because I'm just, I'm just a good guy.
Well, give me some fixtures then, Cormac.
All right, put them out. Go straight to Saturday there.
Okay, straight away, I'm looking at... God, there's no good game. Oh, no, Tottenham-Chelsea. We'll go for Tottenham-Chelsea.
That's the interesting one.
Tottenham-Chelsea.
So that's on Saturday?
Yeah.
What are you all?
I'm going for a Chelsea 2-1 victory.
You're back on the Spurs losing at home situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually going to go... I'm going to go 3-2 to Spurs.
Wow.
Yeah. Big game. Wow. Big game incoming, folks. Is there a Friday night game? You know what? Fuck it. Wrexham Coventry on the Friday night, which is actually quite a big... Well, not a big game really, is it? But, it's a fun game anyway to look at. I think... I mean, you've got Frank Lampard's Coventry. I'm going to go 1-0 to Coventry, so 0-1. Wow. Yeah.
I'm gonna go for a 3-1 Coventry.
Yeah, I think that's fair, unfortunately, for Wrexham. Do you want to look at all Sunday's games? God, there's not a lot of games this weekend. Any fun ones, anyway?
Are they playing again?
Rangers Celtic, of course they are. Speaking of, a quick mention to the Scottish football, isn't the League Cup?
Guys,
the heart top of the league. Yeah. You've seen that, they're flying.
Celtic, Tony Bloom's heart.
That's it, as well as Brendan Rodgers leaving again, Celtic. Yeah.
And do you see the extreme message that the chairman sent out after he left? Basically saying Rodgers is a narcissistic, crazy man and was just lying to everyone. And he said something completely different to us and he created a toxic environment. Huge. Well done, Brendan Rodgers. Yeah. You love to see it.
Any games you like the look of here then?
I'm going to go for the Manchester City-Bournemouth game.
Yep, on Sunday, 4:30, which is actually, I mean, you know.
That's a good game.
It is. I think it'd be a very good game.
I'm going to back my horse. I'm going to go 2-1 Bournemouth.
I like it. I like it a lot. I'm going to go 1-1.
Wow.
Hang on, I don't think 1-1 is it.
Something they taught me in the dojo was to not put 2-2 for every score.
I think that's wrong.
Yeah, I did question them heavily.
I think that's wrong. Right. You know, it is Wednesday at the time of recording. No, I won't do any games tonight. That's boring. I was thinking about it. But let's look ahead at the other fixture on Sunday, West Ham Newcastle.
Wow.
Let's just go for that. I think Newcastle are just that well, and West Ham are just that bad.
I reckon it'll be. Go on, you go first.
0-2, I think.
Yeah,
it's Newcastle.
I'm going to say 3-0 Newcastle.
West Ham in some serious trouble, folks. Oh, they're Bet allergic you. To winning, just like me. And we have final game, Taylor. What do you got for me?
Show me the Saturday fixtures, and then I'm going to go for Liverpool Aston Villa.
Yep, nice like that. Now, that's a tricky one to call, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 2-1 Liverpool.
Yeah, I think that's probably the sensible decision. But I'm going to go for 2-1 Liverpool. Sounds good, doesn't it? You know what? In your honour, 2-2.
Yes. Has to be one.
Yeah. So, quick recap of the results that we just picked. Spurs, Chelsea, I said 3-2. Taylor said 1-2. Wrexham, Coventry. Cormac said 0-1. Taylor said 1-3. City, Bournemouth, I said 1-1. Taylor said 1-2. West Ham, Newcastle, I said 0-2. Taylor said 0-3. Liverpool, Villa, 2-2. Taylor said 2-1.
Boom.
There it is, folks. So that is this weekend's games. Look forward to next week where we come back and see how we've done. And then obviously there'll be Champions League next week is back as well. We'll be able to touch on that a little bit. But yeah, I think that's probably...
Well, before we do finish, I just want to quickly touch on the Red and White Chalkboard Fantasy League.
Okay, yeah.
And the stakes in that because, well, you'll be very happy to hear, listeners, that your hosts are killing it in the league. We are tormenting our other league.
Well, let's just say who's first and who's second first. I am top of the
league. Oh, yeah, sorry. That's
putting us as we.
Cormac is having some killing
weeks. I'm crushing it at the moment. I'm crushing it on this. I'm just... I know ball guys.
He does know ball. He got the bet.
That's all the bet. Yeah, won however much money on an acre of all the results. Yeah, so I'm absolutely crushing it, guys.
So, long story short, we know ball.
We do know ball.
Through Cormac.
Yeah. No, but we're doing well in the fantasy. If you guys haven't joined it, you're probably way too late now.
Yeah.
But for those who are in it, get your money up.
Hand up, brother.
Sort it out. I think that is everything. That was kind of a real speed run, just getting back into the mix of things. We'll have another episode for you guys soon. Bit of pleasure. Love doing this. Really want to get back into it and just do more and more and more. Taylor, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Cormac.
Thanks for those watching. Like, subscribe, do all that fun stuff. Share, whatever. And tips to get it back.